Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The Mount in Lenox, Massachusetts, welcomes 40,000 visitors during its season from May 3rd to October 31st. It's a destination point for lovers of Edith Wharton's writing, historical mansion, exquisite gardens, and now lovers of contemporary sculpture. Common Ground is an exhibition of contemporary outdoor sculptures currently on display at the Mount and presented in partnership with Sculpture Now. I went to the Mount yesterday and walked around the exhibition with Anne John, director of Sculpture Now and a sculptor herself. First things first, of course, what is Sculpture Now?
Sculpture Now was founded under the name of Sculpture Now 17 years ago. Before then, there was an organization called the Renaissance Guild. And when the founder of that one moved to Florida, he said, you take it. So the first thing I did was to change the name because a lot of people thought we were out jousting. It's been 17 years of annual exhibitions in many different places. For a while, maybe 3 or 4 years, we were at the Berkshire Botanical Garden. And then we were in the fields down to the river behind the Norman Rockwell Museum, which was very interesting because our theme was the river in its very many aspects. And then we have been in the town parks and the lawns of towns like Stockbridge and Great Barrington, Lenox, Lee. And then we did a couple of pilot projects out in the hill towns of Hinsdale and Beckett.
And you've been at the Mount for the past 2 years, this year and last year.
Yes, we almost feel like we're home here. It's just been a wonderful experience to be at the Mount. The sights are gorgeous. The whole place is so beautiful and so beautifully maintained. And we have a really good collaboration with the people here at the Mount. The artists love it. They want to come back. They see their pieces in this kind of surrounding. I call it a green gallery. And they say this is the best they've seen their work in other exhibitions.
How does that partnership begin?
Well, we are very fortunate that we share Lila Burley on our boards. She's the chair of the board of the Mount, and she's also on the Sculpture Now board and has been for many years. And she came up with the idea, and we took it and ran with it. Susan Whistler, who's the director here at the Mount, and I worked out the details from there on, and everybody thinks it's just been wonderful.
How is the sculpture, how are the artists selected?
In November, I send out a prospectus to our list of more than 200 sculptors and then to various websites that artists check to see what they want to apply for. They submit, they send us slides and some information about the sculpture that they may show with us and their resume. And then we jury it, and we have a very large democratic jury. All the board members of Sculpture Now are invited to participate, and now we include two people from the Mount, Susan and Ross Jolly, who is in charge of the special events up here. So we look at the slides, and it takes us a long time, like 4 or 5 hours, and then we vote. Then I take all the sheets of paper home and start my calculator to see how many votes did each piece get, and then from there on we select this year 25 out of 70 something submissions.
What do you think having the sculpture here at the Mount adds to the experience of coming to the Mount? Why is this something that you think is important for people to see?
It does a number of things. It offers art in places where you don't necessarily go just to see art, like a museum and a gallery, and you're walking through it. You know, you see the art and then you also see the nature. So the two of them really work together. Like on many of the sculptures, when we're doing the sighting, we're very concerned of what do you see through it? What does it frame? People who are not necessarily coming here to see the sculpture see it. Sculpture's always sort of been the stepchild, and a lot of people are not quite sure what it's about. They come here, they see it, they can touch it, they can walk through it, and all of a sudden it becomes part of their reality.
For the artists, for the creators, what do you think, and I know you are a sculptor yourself, so hopefully you can speak to this. What do you think it is about the large format sculpture that drives one to create it, that it becomes the art form that you pursue?
Well, that's a big question, and there are probably 25 different answers. I think, again, coming back to the physicality of large sculpture, where you can be in it or you can walk all around it, it's not delicate. It's very real. Why do we all make big sculptures? It's a very good question, because it's very expensive and it can be very cumbersome to move it. Many of the pieces need cranes, and yet everybody is driven to do it for some reason or another.
Do you want to talk about some of the pieces in the show now?
Sure. Let's start right here with the tree pot by Laura Reinhardt. Laura Reinhardt is a young woman who has created this piece representing life. What you're seeing is a helix shape of a copper, and inside it is natural rock hanging enceased in the copper strands. And the pod is aiming towards the ground as if it's about to fall in and regenerate. And Laura was playing with the concept of how big would a pod of a tree be if it was in proportion to the tree and not just a little nut. It's hanging from a wire, and so to her delight, it actually moves. I think we can see it moving ever so slightly now, but with a little more wind, it really starts moving and turning around and giving you that whole helix shape. It's interesting when you read the artist's statements. So many of them are talking about human emotions, nature, spirituality, and even though the pieces look very abstract, they originate with that kind of a concept.
Anne John is the director of sculpture now, and she's taking us around their Common Ground exhibition at the Mount in Lenox, Massachusetts.
This is a new sculpture created specifically for this show. It's not what we call site-specific, though it does relate to the Mount. The artist talks about the framework is on the scale of the doorways and the openings in the mansion. Then he talks about the X shape on top being such a well-known mark that we use for so many things, like Xing out somebody, putting an X in an eye of somebody who's fainted, or signing if you can't write. And so he used that symbol. And the center part of it is handmade glass. And when you walk through it, which we could, you'll see the sun lighting it all up. So he has a studio out in Monterey, where he actually has a glass kiln, and he creates the shapes by carving another material, casting it, and then casting the glass. It's a long process. Just a glass is at least 6 weeks of work.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he had the assistance of one of our other artists, who's a master welder, Jean Flores, and the two of them created this steel framework. It's called Sine Nomine, which means without name. Bill Carlson is one of our better established and very well-known artists, with quite a resume of sculptures that he has in many museums and places he has taught. And I think he's finally just come to the Berkshires.
Let's walk through it. Yeah, that's beautiful. And the different pieces of glass that make up the X are colors that are in the landscape surrounding it, behind it, especially when it's lit up.
Yeah, he does talk about it referencing the architecture, but also nature. So like you say, the colors are definitely reflecting of that. The straight lines reflect the architecture, but then the more curved lines, like the white curlies in the center, he says refers to the sky, to clouds. So there's both the soft and the hard edges.
We're approaching one that I particularly noticed because it's so sparkly on my drive-in. Tell us about this one.
Well, this is Cosmic Inflation by Henry Richardson, and it does really sparkle amazingly beautiful in the sun. And we had hoped to have lighting at night, and we did put some solar lights, but they're not nearly as good as sunlight. It's very different from any of the other sculptures. What we have here is a globe, an orb, and it's made out of half-inch thick plate glass, the regular kind of glass that you'll see has a slightly bluish color to it. and it's hollow in the middle, and it's constructed by hand chiseling, hand cutting and hand chiseling the glass, and then assembling it with a silicone that Henry says will last 100 years.
Wow.
So then it builds up, and you'll see that there's spaces in between the layers. And our first concern, of course, was, is this sharp? Can anybody get hurt? And Henry said, absolutely not. I have kids running up to it and touching it, because what he does, once it's assembled, he grinds all the edges so you can actually put your hands on it.
That's a lot of edges. There are many, many particles to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an intricate piece. And to get the perfect shape, he builds a form that it fits within.
All right, we have arrived.
So here we have the Highland Layer by Alan Williams. Alan is inspired by his Celtic background, but he's also incredibly lucky to have his own quarry, his own stone workshop, a couple of big cranes, and somebody who can help him. Because what we're looking at here is 60,000 pounds of boulders. And it's all assembled on the site, of course, mostly just by weight. Then there's no hardware in here. Some of the boulders are fitted to rest solidly on top of each other, and they have. Because actually, this is the only piece that last year we didn't have the heart to take down. We thought it's just going to be a pile of boulders back in his studio. So we asked Alan if he would like to leave it up for one more show, and he agreed to that. So it's a very popular piece because you can go inside it. And he kind of invited you to go in by polishing the floor. And so there's the entry, and then the back wall is what he calls an erratic boulder, which is, means it's different from usually what comes out of his quarry. Yeah. And the whole shape and size of the sculpture was based on the floor piece, which he said was the biggest he had ever quarried, and then that determined how everything else would fit on top. When he does the cutting, to my understanding, instead of using steel tools, he will heat up the stone and then it will spall off, so you won't see any tool marks. So altogether, it looks like it belongs here.
It does.
He talks about it as being a sacred space and talks about the love and respect we've always had for materials like granite throughout the ages. And we actually had a couple of people come up here and ask if they could come back and just sit in there and meditate. I think he, you know, hit a nerve there. And kids just love to run in. And look, Mommy, come on.
The duck. And turn side face. I don't know if I'm going to fit, Anne.
You're in.
You're right.
Look how tall it is in here.
Oh, wow.
People, you know, I tell them you have to reach up if you want to touch the ceiling.
Yeah, no, it's significantly taller than I am.
Yeah. Oh. And then if you look in the back, you'll see what he means by this being a very special stone with the veins that you don't see in any of the other boulders.
Yeah, it is. It's a different shade of gray too. It's darker.
Yeah.
Great. And I won't make you listen to me squeeze back out of the sculpture, nearly dropping my mic, my sunglasses, and my decorum. Common Ground is an exhibition of contemporary outdoor sculptures, and it will be at the Mount in Lenox, Massachusetts through October 31st.
Okay, so here we have Erie 4 by Jean Flores, who is an incredible craftsman with steel. You know, I tell people when we come up to this, can you imagine that this just started as sheets of steel? And then it was bent and welded so that you can't even see where the welds are. It's called Erie, which is the nest of predatory birds. And he thinks of it as the nest for the two pipes on top of the birds. Mm-hmm. And then the semicircle below it is the nest. And when the wind is really going here, you'll see that the nest part is spinning.
Oh, wow.
And the two pipes go up and down and sideways. Okay. And sometimes they hit, and then you have this wonderful gong sound. We don't have enough wind today. I wish I could show it to you, but it's very still day.
Yeah, it's a beautifully still day, and it is too tall for us to reach up and give it a spin.
Sometimes I can find a stick and get it moving, but I don't have one with me today.
It's okay. We can imagine it.
This is another piece. Once it starts to move, people just sit here and meditate. You know, coming back to your previous questions, why do people do that? I think like Jean really enjoys that people spend time, they take time out, they sit here, they watch it slowly moving, they start thinking, they look at nature, they relax. Maybe many of us want to give that as a gift. Here we have Anthony Garner, Kimonos for Edith. It's a very tall piece and very colorful. Anthony was actually talking about the delight he had in painting each segment. There are 5 segments, and how he really got into the different colors. So it's sort of a combination of a sculpture and a painting. I think it's about 20 feet high, and it's made out of wood, and it represents the obi, the scarf that's tied in the back of a kimono. And he references Edith Wharton's interest at that time in the Japanese style of fashion and the fabrics, the rich colors. But he also ties it into Japanese Zen philosophy, and I can quote you what he says on that. He represents the 5 traditional Japanese elements: water, earth, fire, air, and void. So he has like 2 different inspirations in here, and it all comes together in this amazing sculpture. He's an architect, which was a good thing because it's a very complicated installation. And he was up here several times figuring out the hardware and the technique, and it all worked out really beautifully.
I was wondering why when 4 of them are bright, 1 of them would be black, but that makes perfect sense because 1 of them is void.
And I think in Western philosophy, we don't have the void as a basic element, but we do have the others. So it's interesting that he added that.
And this one is yours.
Oh, you gave it away. When I give tours here, I don't say who the artist is. And I say, what do you think of this one? And then I get all good feedback this year. But yes, this is my sculpture, and it's called Arch 2. It's a very large sculpture. It's about 9 feet tall and 13 feet long, and you can go inside it. And once you're inside it, a couple of things happen that are kind of interesting. You can sit on the seat, and if you read what it says, she sings, and you face into one corner, and I face into another corner.
Okay.
You can hear the sound traveling the arch.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, I'm holding the microphone up to the sculpture. I have my back to you, and you are how many feet away from me?
About 8 feet.
Yeah, about 8 feet away from me. But if I mic you, talk again.
Yeah.
It comes right through the sculpture.
Isn't that great? The interesting thing is, I didn't plan this.
Yeah.
It quite often happens, I know for myself and for some other artists, that intuitively you do something that somebody else will come along. A physicist told me a couple of weeks ago, oh, I know the formula for that. So to me it was a gift.
But to them it's science.
Yes, I know. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And then on top here we have a hole pattern which lets the sun in, and when the sun gets a little lower you get reflections on the opposite wall, and it stretches it and looks different as time goes by.
Describe the hole pattern to us.
The hole pattern is a spiral with 2 hands, and to me the spiral symbolizes eternity, and the hands are the hands on eternity or hands on the sculpture. And a lot of artists, including myself, talk about working with the mind, the hand, and the eyes, and that's all part of what they're thinking as they're creating their sculpture.
Well, it's wonderful.
Susan Whistler is the executive director of The Mount, and we stopped and spoke with her about having Sculpture Now at The Mount.
Oh, I think it's been a terrific partnership for both organizations. And Wharton herself had an interest in sculpture. She had sculpture in her forecourt, she had sculpture on the terrace, and she had some very eclectic pieces as the centerpieces for her fountains. So I think she would be very pleased to see the great diversity of shapes and forms and materials that are used in this particular show.
And do you have favorite pieces that have been here?
Oh, I love the more whimsical pieces in this particular show. And Wharton had a great sense of humor, so I think that the humor in a number of these pieces would not be lost on her. I would say the more whimsical ones are my favorite.
This is the second year that Sculpture Now has been here at the Mount. Was it a learning and growing experience from year to year, or did you start off last year pretty strong?
Oh, I think certainly things were streamlined between year one and year two. But overall, I think it's a collaboration that's been, you know, satisfactory right from the start.
And do you know now at the end of this year if they'll be back next year?
Anne and I are already talking, and I very much hope that we'll have Sculpture Now here again in 2015.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Once again, Anne John is the director of Sculpture Now, and we spoke with her about one more sculpture.
All right. The last one we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, as we approach it from a distance, you'll see how it changes. There are seven units. They're all made of aluminum, so they are sort of silvery. It always surprises people that the top edge looks very different from the sides, and it's just the reflection of the sun. Mm. It's by Fei Qin, and it's called Waves. And she has a studio near the Hudson River in New York City. And that, to her, is her inspiration for many, many years of many, many sculptures. She sees it as a life force. She lives with it every day. She watches the waves and the changes and how the whole river flows. So what was interesting when she came up, she doesn't have a specific pattern of how to lay out the seven pieces. It depends on the site. Fortunately, they're very light because we moved them around a lot. First, we had to determine what part of this whole lawn would really bring out the beauty of the sculpture. And we got that decided. And then she started playing with the interaction between the seven pieces. And she was probably at it for a couple of hours. Yeah. So the artists, you know, are very involved. One thing that has happened here at the Mount, which is also really wonderful, is that the people that we work with from the Mount are very understanding of the artist. It's not like they say, well, put it there and thank you. They say, where would you like? We can move it. What do you think of that? So there's that interaction which makes the artist really happy. And I think it actually is a lot of fun for the people who work with us here at the Mount to get involved with the sculptures, with the artist.
Remind us how much longer the show is up.
It ends on October 31st, and like I said, we have two more guided tours on Sundays, September 14th and October 12th.
Thank you again.
Well, thank you so much for coming up here and for your interest and for having me on your program.
My pleasure.
Common Ground will be at the Mount through October 31st. They'll have free guided tours of the exhibition beginning at 11:30 a.m. on Sunday, September 14th and Sunday, October 12th. Sculpture Now also offers workshops to students in public schools in the Berkshires. To learn more, visit sculpturenow.org. The Mount's website is edithwharton.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.